Okay, Mr. Briggs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've heard a lot about the toxicity in surface waters and the contamination of drinking water. These are the most serious issues the Water Board has ever faced, and they've got to be addressed. And I believe, actually, a couple board members may have pointed out in their questions that the Water Board is the only agency with the authority and the responsibility to address and resolve these issues. There isn't anybody else. The public has a right to clean water. No one has a right to pollute public waters. But nitrates in groundwater and surface water from agricultural discharges have been documented for decades. That's the legacy part. But they continue to increase today in many locations, not everywhere. But overall, we see increases, and it's time to reverse that trend. Unfortunately, many Central Coast residents are drinking water from a new water source that they had to pay for because their original drinking water wells became contaminated. Private individuals and taxpayers are therefore shouldering the burden of costs for replacement water, both temporarily, for example, bottled water, and long-term from new and deeper groundwater wells or wellhead treatment, and we have a lot of examples of both. But there are solutions. That's the good news. We've heard a lot about technical assistance providers, researchers, and consultants that have shown examples over and over again of success. That's good news. Growers indicate that many are already implementing these practices that are successful and that they're achieving targets. That was part of the Strawberry Commission's presentation last time. And as we've seen in other arenas like stormwater, another part of the regulatory world that the board deals with, the Water Board must adopt necessary requirements or they will not be implemented at the scale in the areas where they're needed most. The problems that we have in our watershed are extremely serious. In the areas where good ag practices are making improvements, that's great. Those folks should keep going and keep doing what they're doing. Those operations won't have problems being in compliance with this proposed order. For the other operations, we need to have a more accountable regulatory framework to make more progress. And we need to get going. Farmers have been continuously learning better ways to operate since the beginning of farming. They need to continue to do so, but with an increased awareness and emphasis on their effects of their operations on the waters within their watersheds and on the effects of the drinking water of their downgradient neighbors. As we get into implementation, we will use adaptive management to change and improve as well. Much of the interaction that we'll have with growers will come from the information that's submitted according to the monitoring and reporting program. We can actually adjust that program administratively, as we pointed out here just recently, as we learn how to make it work more efficiently, for it to be more effective, to make more sense in ways that minimize the regulatory burden on the grower. But we can make those adjustments once we get going with implementation. We've heard a lot of comments that agricultural dischargers must be accountable to the public by reporting information that verifies compliance, and that resolution of these severe water quality problems requires that accountability, just like any other individual, business, or industry that's regulated by the Water Board. Existing and potential water quality impairment from agricultural waste discharges and runoff takes on added significance and urgency given the degraded drinking water and the threats to public health that are associated with that. The limited sources of drinking water supplies that we have in our region and the proximity of our agricultural lands to critical water-dependent habitat. We must not delay the necessary action to correct these problems. It's the Water Board's role and responsibility on all of those fronts. The gentleman today talked about his experience with underground tank cases and even postured that all those cases pale in comparison to this, the issue that we're looking at today. And I'm not saying that we're talking about solvent spill cases or underground tank cases here, but we are talking about groundwater contamination that is more widespread than those types of cases. A couple of you board members who have more tenure will probably recall some groundwater contamination cases with MTBE or benzene, where we actually had buses of people who showed up at our board meetings. And Mr. Jeffries, I think you might recall you had to tell people they couldn't shake their signs in the back of the room. It was kind of like a demonstration. These people were pretty excited because they relied on wells that were in the area of this contamination. They were coming to the board meeting demanding severe and swift actions, and the board agreed with swift and actions, and they adopted aggressive, demanding orders with frequent updates on cleanup progress at nearly every meeting for years until the threats were resolved. The reason I'm pointing this out is for some perspective. Those were cases where the wells were not contaminated. They were not even tainted. There were no detections at all. They were merely threatened by a nearby release. And yet we had stringent board orders. So contrast that regulatory action for merely threatened wells with the issue that we have today. We have wells all over the region in the heavy-duty irrigated ag areas that are not only threatened or merely tainted, but we have sole-source drinking water wells that are degraded, contaminated beyond the maximum contaminant level, with many of them 2 times, 5 times, 10 times, up to 16 times the maximum contaminant level. And we have, on top of that, as if that weren't urgent enough, we have areas that are nutrient-laden, and we have toxic surface waters in a large percentage of the waters in our agricultural areas. The situation is dire. I've worked on pollution issues in the region for 37 years, and never have we had an issue before us that is as severe, as broad in terms of the types of problems with both surface and groundwater, and yet the proposed order is not draconian. It is measured with tiers. It's reasonable. It allows time for improvements. And while it's not draconian, another thing that it's not is perfect. We've worked on it for 2.5 years. We could continue to debate and revise the order for 2.5 more years, and we'd end up with a draft that's, guess what, not perfect. Taking the time to chase an unattainable goal of perfection delays what we must do. Such delays would mean that we're ignoring the urgency of the situation. The urgency is the high percentage of surface waters that are toxic and our groundwater that's polluted. Now, toxicity is more short-term, and we should be able to see more short-term improvements with that problem. Groundwater is long-term, and yes, it will take a lot of years to solve that problem. But as one of our board members said almost a year ago in response to that notion, well, we'd better get started. So I recommend that it's time we adopt the order. And the last slide that we have here is just a reminder of the fact that since we have a panel, how does the board take action? So I recommend that you deliberate as you would, as if you were a full board making a decision today. The only difference is that your vote today translates into a recommendation to the next quorum of the board. And if you want changes, I ask that you please make them specific, just as you would if you were adopting an order as a full board, in the form of a motion and a vote. And that way, we as staff will know, without guesswork, exactly what it is to bring back to the full quorum of the board. Thanks.
Okay. Who would like to go first, if any of you? I have my own thoughts on what I would like to see happen, but I don't need to be the first one to speak. But I will if you want me to. Gabe, you want to start? Or?
What I want to do, I think it's more in terms of a question. question for staff.
Okay.
I've heard every workshop we've done.
Hold on.
You're getting garbled.
John's got to fix something. Can you, Monica, can your mic go?
How's that sound?
Good.
In every workshop, we've heard concern about what's going to happen. You don't want to look again?
Yeah.
Okay, let's try this one now.
No, that's good now. Has it just turned off?
Is that okay?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay. Anyway, in every workshop, we've heard concern about what's the proprietary nature of any kind of well tests and what is found in individual wells. And I think that's a clear difference. Staff very clearly wants to know the condition in specific wells so that they can begin to map the problem and understand it better. The data available now is pretty much on a regional basis, according to what's been said here. I think the ag folks really are very nervous about reporting individual ranch well conditions. And I've heard some people suggest that maybe there would be future problems if their information was reported now. So I'd like a comment from staff about, is there a middle ground? Is there some way that we can honor the concerns of the ag industry and still accomplish the water board goals?
Can I just say something first, Mr. Hodgin? The water code, when the board issues a waiver of waste discharge requirements, the water code requires that you have monitoring, unless you have some reason that monitoring is not necessary because it's not a high-risk problem or not a significant water quality problem. If you require monitoring, the monitoring is required by the law to be reported publicly. So if your order requires monitoring, it has to be reported. Now, given that, there could be some information about the wells that would not be publicly reported, but the data needs to be available. Your second question was about proprietary information, and there is a section of the Water Code that requires that the board protect proprietary information, trade secrets, and that kind of thing. So that is required to be protected, and the board staff deals with that regularly in making sure that proprietary information, trade secrets, are protected from public disclosure. So they can still answer the question if there's some middle ground, but I just want to let you know, if you require monitoring, it needs to be public. It is required to be reported.
Okay, just to go back to your first point, you're saying that the suggestion that Farm Bureau, for example, could get together and obtain information on a kind of a group basis, and they might know the individual ranches, but we wouldn't know here, that's not going to be possible?
If you require monitoring by individuals, that monitoring data has to be reported publicly.
Mm-hmm. But what
or
if
by, or cooperatively, or however you require monitoring to be developed and submitted, mm-hmm. it's required by law to be reported publicly.
What if it's group monitoring?
The group monitoring has to be reported publicly, yes.
Whatever wells they're using, whatever.
Right. There could some of the, I mean, I'd have to look up the specific section of the law, but there is some information about individual drinking water wells that is not required to be reported publicly, but the data must be reported.
I really want to make sure I understand this point. A coalition of some sort could not do the monitoring and perhaps number the wells or something, but we would not necessarily know which specific ranch it was on. I'm trying to think of there's some possible way to honor both. I think I can make you say that's not a choice.
I'm just checking the law right now.
Perhaps the other option is, and Francis can correct me if I'm wrong here, that we could make it clear what our enforcement priorities or enforcement approach would be, so that if the concern is that information is submitted to the board and that we take enforcement action on it, we can do a better job of explaining what our enforcement priorities are and when and under what conditions we would propose enforcement actions to the board. Because from staff's perspective, as I was mentioning earlier, there is this process that we go through, and the vast majority of enforcement cases or potential enforcement cases never come to the board or never even result in the issuing of fines. They are resolved at a staff level. And it's we work with the dischargers. If we think there's a problem or a violation, we almost always work with the dischargers. They often explain to us what the situation is in their case, and then we make a decision on whether we move forward or not. And often it is resolved at that level. And I understand the fear, you know, because this is a regulatory enforcement agency. But the reality of it is that most of these cases are resolved without coming to the board, without resulting in fines.
What I hear you saying is that cooperating now will not necessarily be punished in the future.
What?
Well, I don't know that. Maybe I can get back to his first question. So the law requires that in issuing a waiver, the waiver shall include but need not be limited to the performance of individual, group, or watershed-based monitoring, and that the purpose of the monitoring is to be designed to support the development and implementation of the waiver program, including but not limited to verifying the adequacy and effectiveness of the waiver's conditions. And you can consider volume, duration, frequency, and constituents of the discharge, the extent and type of existing monitoring activities, etc. Monitoring results shall be made available to the public. So that's basically, those are the kinds of things that monitoring is supposed to evaluate. And yes, monitoring information can be used for enforcement. It is that, but you're required by law to have monitoring, and that the purpose is to evaluate whether, in fact, your conditions are working and that water quality protection is being achieved.
Can I follow up a little on that also, Francis, just to add a little bit of perspective, Mr. Hodgson? The draft order requires, for Tier 1 and Tier 2, two samples. That's it. Two samples over 5 years. So I'm not sure what ramifications or consequences that are being anticipated from two samples. But for context, I think it's important to recognize that there's a lot of dischargers similar to those that are being regulated by this order that would have similar concerns. So, for example, in Region 5, as part of the dairy order, they also have an irrigation nutrient management plan. They are being required to sample their wells annually over their time period, and they're submitting that data. So, and then underground storage tanks also, it's a little bit different type of program, obviously, but what I wanted to recognize is that many of those dischargers are small family owners, and they live at their areas of business, and they also have concerns about reporting that data. And I think in that context, there is some level of information confidentiality in terms of like their private residence address and things like that that are not part of the public distribution data. So it's out there. Things we're reporting data like this already.
Yeah, he
can't hear you.
The button?
Yeah.
I want to pick up on what you were just saying and confirm then that we would be able to gather the data, but not the public would not necessarily know street addresses for the location of that data?
There are very specific rules about confidentiality in terms of the private
private wells and location of
private
wells.
I'm not certain what those are, but I know, for as an example, in the underground storage tank program, the way that is being interpreted there is that if your business is your private residence, for example, then those well locations don't show up in a way that can be displayed to the public, but they're reported to the board as part of the reporting requirements. So that's one area that we can at least look into to see how that would affect the reporting requirements here.
Okay. I think we've covered that point. You had, Monica, you had something?
I just wanted to be sure I heard the very first line of the excerpt that you read. Did that say that you could require individual or group monitoring?
The conditions of the waiver shall include, but need not be limited to, the performance of individual, group, or watershed-based monitoring.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else, Monica?
Yeah, okay, I can go. Well, I appreciate everything that has come into the record through these series of meetings, and I've learned a lot, and as I expected, I continue to appreciate the challenges that that we are all confronted with, and we all have distinct and different purposes for wanting to see some of these problems addressed, and we're all considering short-term and long-term impacts on the types of approaches that are going to be required. I'm also, I'm learning a lot about the legacy issues, and I also recognize that the agencies that have been working on this, and I said this earlier with a lot of passion, the agencies are working on these issues, and I realize that, but still, we see that at the county level, the changes aren't being implemented. And thank you for Matt for the update on the Monterey County's work, because I had those same questions. I saw in the report that these committees were formed and advisory bodies are formed and 5-year plans are put into place. These are all voluntary efforts, and I think, it's commendable that we have seen BMPs come out of those efforts and that we see some improvements. But we still see places that are continuing to degrade. And when consider that in rural areas, folks are relying on well water, almost 100%, I believe, except where they're buying bottled water, that is huge. I know that in the letters we receive, the public health agency supports this order. And that tells me something. That tells me that they see this as contributing and adding to the tools that are going to be put into place in order to start to clean up the water. I do appreciate the legacy component of nitrates impacting groundwater, but at the same time, I know that in other aspects of the regional board's work, that we do hold landowners accountable for whatever the conditions are, and the cleanup has to proceed, especially when it triggers such serious effects, health effects. Generally, though, those situations are pretty small and limited to, small segments of communities, perhaps in urban areas, perhaps not, but not on this magnitude. So again, I have to agree with Mr. Briggs that the magnitude of this issue really requires that we take some significant action. And thank you for bringing up the MTBE issue, because while I wasn't part of the board when the majority of that work went on, I certainly was part of the public and very aware of it. And seeing the kind of outcomes that have occurred, it's remarkable. We changed the way things were done. We changed business as usual. So what I have to say to staff at this point is, you know, I like the changes that have been proposed. I think the effort to be responsive to finding some middle ground, not middle ground in the sense of compromise for the sake of compromise, but in some considered evaluation of where our program can be more effective in terms of considering the criteria that we're all trying to keep our eye on. The farmers have come forward and pointed out that, you know, they don't think the tiering structure is really meeting the need. I'm not sure that that's the case. I think there are some good efforts here to identify some criteria that could start us off, and as Michael said, this is a starting point, and I certainly regard it as that. I do have some questions about the individual monitoring, which I think is really at the heart of beginning to characterize what, where the problems are and what practices need to be innovated in order to address them. And I use that word very carefully. Innovated meaning that unique solutions to individual farm operations. I'm interested in the regional concept in terms of the small scale sub-watershed subset of monitoring data that could perhaps give us the same kind of characterization. And my question would be to Francis, and I'm thinking of the alternative farm plan where the coalition is looking at the regional scale. I don't know how small that scale is, so I have questions about that. But let's say that we had a sub-watershed and we had 10 operations going on in that, or 10 farms in that sub-watershed. And if that sub-watershed was found in 5 years not to be meeting the criteria, what action would we be able to take? What enforcement could we look at in terms of enforcing the regulations? Would we be able to take action against all 10, or how could we use that farm alternative plan for cooperative development of BMPs and cooperative monitoring and so forth, and still have some way to begin to address noncompliance?
Well, the way that the order is set up, and that's typical of this kind of waiver for non-point sources, is that if you find that after some period of time that the conditions of the waiver are not being effective, then probably the first step is to look at, can dischargers improve management practices that would make it more effective? But in terms of enforcement, did they comply with the conditions of the waiver? And the conditions are, the way it's proposed now, is to do these plans, farm plans and monitoring, and evaluate that are geared towards meeting water quality standards. And if they're not working, if they don't do them, that would be first level, if they mm-hmm. don't do them. And then mm-hmm. the second level, if they're not effective, have them submit new plans. So the enforcement might be to issue an order to submit additional plans about what they would do. Mm-hmm. And you could issue cleanup and abatement orders to require people to do cleanup.
Well, that's where I'm at.
The areas you're looking at, that the water code provides for that, and you would need to evaluate the information of who among the 10 in your example would be responsible for that. Possibly it would be all 10. Would have to look. There might be evidence that only some of them are responsible. You would just look at the evidence you have about whether you would order all of them to address the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would have the authority to do that.
Yeah.
You would have the authority to require alternative water supply to be provided to people who are affected. So
there is where I think the alternative farm plan leaves us with a gap in terms of certainty of where the source is and which of the operations we should take action against. And you know, it just seems to me to be creating a situation where we have actually no further tools other than the continued modification of the farm plan. So that concerns, I'm talking about surface water monitoring there. Groundwater monitoring, I think I've heard everybody today, and I agree. We cannot wait. We need to develop our own data, and we need to take the lead, I think, in creating a process and a timeline for addressing groundwater issues. It is a long-term problem, but apparently the work that's gone on through the other agencies has had very little effect. So I think this is our time to take this issue up and this problem up and develop the regulations and get that part of the program going. I think I'll stop there.
Okay. I guess I'm next, Mr. Chair.
You are, Mr. Vice Chair.
I'm not going to be redundant on my two colleagues that already spoke. I hope I won't be anyway. I was really impressed with the ag proposal. I really thought they did an outstanding job and they came a long ways. The only thing that was lacking, and they proposed that today, was the groundwater monitoring, which I thought was really critical for this plan to work. Now also, I think the staff has made some adjustments and come a ways as well. But I think that for us to proceed, we need to instruct the staff to reanalyze the ag proposal in depth and come back to us. I'm concerned with proprietary information. I think that's critical for ag. I'm concerned about the cost because all those folks work on a small margin to make their farms and ranches work. The small farmer that has 50 acres or 100 acres, he doesn't have the availability or the resources to go out and hire a lot of professional people to do all the specialized work that needs to be done, and that's why I think with the joint efforts of putting a group together in watersheds is an important thing for all of us to look at. I think all the testimony that we heard for the last year or 2 years has been very important to all of us to come to some conclusion that's going to be beneficial for everybody. And I think you've heard me say over and over again, I'm concerned about the economy. Agriculture is one of the biggest economy engines we have in the state of California, as far as that goes, in the world. And especially in our region, we're fortunate that we do have this type of ag business in our area. I'm concerned about jobs. I'm concerned about land that would have to be put out of production. So all those things that we're all concerned about, I think that the staff has addressed a lot of those. The ag proposal has addressed it, I think, a little bit further because they're used to dealing with those things on a daily basis. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would recommend that I would propose that we send this back to the staff and take an in-depth analysis of the ag waiver compared to what the staff has proposed. I'm not saying compromise. There's, you know, our job, and I took an oath to do a certain job, is to protect the water quality of the state of California. And I think the ultimate thing is that's what we have to do. But how we get there is another way of handling it. And I surely don't want to put people out of business by implementing some type of a program or an ag waiver that would do so. So that's what I'm looking forward to do. And that would be my proposal, is I would support the ag waiver that was proposed by the Ag Coalition.
Russ, would you be willing to put some kind of a time limit? I think we all are aware that at some point we have to get started trying to clean up. And we should do that as soon as possible.
Well,
I hate to see this drag on.
No, it can't drag on, and I think Roger pointed that out, that, you know, we've been 2.5 years, and it could be another 2.5 years, it could be another 5 years. And, you know, I'm here, and my term is up next year, and I would hope, and I would think that we'd have this done somewhere in the next few months. I don't think we're that far apart. And I think there's a lot of cool heads in this room that can make this happen. And I've heard a lot of compromise, if you want to call it compromise. But I think they've listened to this board, and the Ag has come back and reasonably said, we realize that these are some of the concerns, and this is what we're willing to do. And I think the staff has done the same thing. So I think, yeah, maybe I don't really want to put a timeline on it, but I would like to see it done. I'd like to have it done today or last year. But we're talking, you know, this isn't an easy issue. This is a gigantic issue, not only for us, but for the whole state of California. So, Mr. Chair, the hour is getting late, but that would be my recommendation.
Okay, and I have some shared thoughts with what everyone has said. It's difficult for me to sit here and listen to new information, you know, what the California Farm Bureau Group put up for consideration. I would like to have staff take a look at, because I can't sit here and do everything that I've got to do and know exactly what they're proposing and give it fair consideration. Can staff take, now I know that Ms. Dunham submitted some written material that was in strikeout format and gave it to Francis, is that correct? Yeah, does that incorporate the material that you presented today?